Italian Wine Podcast. Cin Cin with Italian Wine People.
Before the show, here is a shout out to our new sponsor, Fero Wine. Fero Wine has been the largest wine shop in Italy since 1920. They have generously supplied us with our new t-shirt. Would you like one? Just donate 50 euros and it's all yours. Plus, we'll throw in our new book, Jumbo Shrimp Guide to International Grape Varieties in Italy. For more info, go to italianwinepodcast.com and click donate. Or check out Italian Wine Podcast on Instagram.
Hello, this is the Italian Wine Podcast with me, Monty Warden. My guest today is Andrea Vincenzo, who is the export manager of an estate called Capuano. Where is your estate then?
Good afternoon. The estate is in the Crotone province in the Calabria region, which is in the south of Italy. More specifically, we are on the hills overlooking the Inciro, which is a little town in Crotone. And we overlook the Ionian Sea.
The Ionian Sea. So you're in a very, very beautiful spot. I envy you.
It's very nice.
Yeah. So what about the vineyards? Are they overlooking the sea as well then?
Yes. The geographical situation of our vineyards is very interesting, actually. You can basically go from somewhere where you could ski to somewhere where you could take a bath in the sea in like 1 hour of driving here in Crotone. And this is kind of results in an interesting situation as far as for the winemaker here. There is a big difference here from the temperature of the day and the temperature of the night, you know? And this means that the grape can mature very quickly and reach the ripe harvesting time very quickly. And the breeze from the sea that is channeled through the hillside, and this removes humidity from the terrain, and this kills mold and bacteria and other dangerous agent. And this is so basically, this is a very good location for vineyards and this kind of and basically for this profession.
So, what is the family history then?
Oh, the Capuano family history is actually goes back several centuries. They've taken care of these lands for entire generations. But they started dealing in wines at around halfway through the 700s. There is actually a letter in the family archives wherein the Cardinal of Amalfi, Pietro Capuano, writes to a brother of his and informs him thus: "Brother, I ask you for that fine nectar that his sanctity himself has asked me of." So like the cardinal, so like the Pope himself was asking for the local wines. Very impressive, honestly. But the winery has gotten a more modern touch in at the start of the 90s when Dr. Raffaele Capuano took the reins of it with the intent of adding value to the local winemaking scene.
So what was his profession? Was he Mr. Capuano? Where did he come from? What was his job? He was a surgeon, I think, yeah?
Yes, I believe so. He was a surgeon.
And he was the one that started bottling the wine?
Yeah, yes, exactly. Like the winemaking tradition goes back centuries, but Dr. Raffaele Capuano is the one that modernized the company, that turned it into our company proper.
What, in your view, makes Ciro such a special place to make wine in? Because it is quite a unique area.
There are a lot of factors at work, honestly. There is, as I said, the geographical feature that certainly has an influence. But there's also a couple of particular vineyard types that have grown here that are local to this place, that have probably have influenced it a lot. Like the two main ones are the Gaiopo for red wine and the Greco Bianco for white wine. There are others that are starting to become more popular, the Maiocco and the Nerello for red wine, and the Pecorello and the Mantonico for white wine, but they're not as common, you know?
So let's talk about the wines. Let's go through them one by one, if that's okay with you.
Oh, certainly.
What about the Neruda? What's that made from?
So the Neruda is dedicated to the famous poet Pablo Neruda, and it's a blend of Merlot and Gallopo. It has a very soft flavor, a lot of our wines are very somewhat traditional in taste, but this one is somewhat more modern taste. It's more with more refined perhaps. Yeah. I should specify that it's a biological wine. Most of our wines are biological. We take that very seriously here.
Okay, what would be a good dish with that?
For the Neruda, I suppose the best pairing for the Neruda will be like meat, red meat specifically. It's particularly good with roast or something hearty like that, something to fill the stomach, you know.
Okay, so the next wine is a white wine called Antea, which is 80% Bianco and 20% Mantonico. What would be a good local dish with that?
I should specify first and foremost that it's good for aperitifs, but honestly, it's good for all sorts of dishes. But specifically for fish, if I had to pick one thing, I would say it's very good. It's a very good pairing for fish.
What's the most popular fish in where you are?
We are relatively near the coast here, you know, so there is a lot of choices. Like one of my family's favorite recipes includes swordfish, for example. But if I had to pair this particular wine, I would recommend anchovies. A nice aperitif with anchovies before the dish to start the meal, and you've already done an excellent first impression with your guests.
Okay, so the next wine is Don Angelo. Who was Don Angelo?
Don Angelo was one of the ancestors of the Don Capuano family. This one is a rosé because we've noticed an increase of interest in rosés over the years all over the world. And it's actually made with a particular technique in winemaking. It's called bloodletting. Although, naturally, there is no blood involved. This is obviously. Now,
the signe in French.
Exactly. It involves allowing the free-run must to emerge naturally from the wine with no or with very limited pressure.
So that was, the Don Angelo, yeah?
Yes, exactly. A lot of the wines that have names of cultural significance to the local situation and the history of the company and the family that gives the company its name.
So the next wine is Aeterum. How do you pronounce that one?
Okay, it's Aeterum. It's Latin.
And that's the Merlot's Cabernet Sauvignon Syrah and Gallopo. And what is that? Is that a very oaky wine or is it unoaked? Obviously, I guess a red wine.
Yes, exactly.
And is it oak aged?
No, not oak aging. It's actually made to rest in French wood. In French wood barrels, it's not specifically oak. It only rests briefly in bottles before being sold to the public. This is one of our most popular products.
Sure. Okay. What about the Ciro Bianco, which you make one with 100% Greco Bianco?
It's also exported, but it sees a lot of sales in Italy. But it's very popular in southern Italy, especially. We sell it a lot around here.
And is that mainly sold in Italy, or is it exported as well?
Yes, it sees a lot of sale in restaurants, but also elsewhere. It's popular in this. It's very popular here, but it also sees sales elsewhere. It's a bit of a jack of all trades kind of wine.
Okay, and you make a Bianco Frizzante Symphony. It's the Greco Bianco and Chardonnay 50-50. And is that oak aged or not?
The Sinfonia, yes, that one is oak aged.
And then you have a wine called Don Raffaele, who was Ciro Rosso, Classico Superiore, Riserva, Sengaiopo. Who was Don Raffaele?
Don Raffaele is actually one of the most important ancestors of the Capuano family. He was the one who built the family home that still stands at the center of the estate. The grapes used in this wine come from a vineyard that has a very limited production. Like it only produces half a kilogram per, I believe it is only half a kilogram per vineyard. This is very little for an entire vineyard. It's so little that every single bottle of Don Raffaele is very rigorously numbered. If you buy a bottle of Don Raffaele, you can see the number on that bottle because they're very limited.
Where is that sold mainly? Is that mainly sold in Italy, or do you export that as well?
That one actually is very popular overseas. We sell it a lot in the US. It sees a lot of sale in Switzerland. This is we actually specialize a lot in sales for like niche markets. Like we don't really sell. A lot of our vineyards produce relatively little wine, but it's very high quality wine. So it's in our best interest to sell to hotels, to restaurants, to these places that can recognize quality and appreciate it. So, and this is especially true in a wine like the Don Raffaele here.
So is there anything that we've missed? Is there anything that you want to tell us?
I do want to specify something that I mentioned a bit, but I feel like it needs to be repeated, is that we take the biological side of things very seriously here. We strongly believe that it's very important for us to keep our territory healthy and to leave it in good condition for the next generation. Not only for their sake, but for ours as well. Because from a purely selfish standpoint, keeping the unhealthy territory means producing a better wine, and it's in our interest to produce a better wine. We are all about high quality, because as I said, we don't produce a lot of wine, so we want what wine we produce to be very high quality. And not only we avoid pesticides and other chemicals, both on the grapes and in the wine, but we are also shooting to become sustainable from an energy standpoint. We expect between solar panels and reducing emissions to become completely economically, energetically self-sustainable by 2023.
So would that be with solar panels mainly?
Yes, exactly. Mainly with solar panels, but we will also be reducing our own emissions of our agricultural machinery.
Is that quite a big issue in Calabria? I mean, you're obviously in a very sunny place and generally fairly dry. Lots of wineries and other businesses in the local area also working with solar panels and other such energy saving.
Well, in Calabria, wind turbines are more popular than solar panels. I believe that on this particular issue, we are a bit ahead of the curve, I think.
Yeah, I forgot about the wind power. That's an interesting point, actually. I mean, where do you put the energy-saving devices, should we say? Do they go in the vineyard, or do they go on land that you've got somewhere else, or what? A windmill, for example.
Well, the details are still a work in progress, but I believe they will go on the various buildings that accompany the vineyards, not on the vineyards themselves, but on the buildings nearby.
Perfect, okay. Alrighty, so is there anything else we missed?
I suppose if there is still a bit of time, I could mention that how we fared during the pandemic. Well, the pandemic has been tough on everybody. There is no ignoring that. But it has taught us something very interesting, the importance of diversification. What kept us afloat during the pandemic was contact with abroad markets. Because while we couldn't make a lot of business with other businesses in Italy, we had a lot of contacts with foreign businesses in America and in the rest of Europe. And that allowed us to keep our heads above water, so to say. And this has been a very important lesson, and we intend to keep it in mind in the future. And so we're going to keep finding new business prospects with other companies abroad.
Let's hope for better times in the future. And if I ever make it down to Calabria, I'll come and see you. I haven't been to Calabria, so I must come and do that on stage.
You're going to be absolutely welcome, and we hope to see you soon.
Thanks very much for coming on the podcast, and we wish you and the business every success, okay?
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Listen to the Italian Wine Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We're on SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Himalaya FM, and more. Don't forget to subscribe and rate the show. If you enjoy listening, please consider donating through ItalianWinePodcast.com. Any amount helps cover equipment, production, and publication costs. Until next time, cin cin.